Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are on episode 4. We've got a bigger cast than normal today. We've got Mike P, Chris, Nehemiah Dyer, and defending European overlord, Chris Ferg. Say hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
So, a relatively packed collection of stuff to go through tonight, but I think we'll start with the ban list. And then we'll go on to some event that we're going to be playing in a bit later on this month, Fight Night, and then we'll touch briefly on Continentals and the incoming defense of Chris's title. So ban list, it's arrived. I'm sure we've all got something to say about it.
I was surprised when it arrived. It was almost a bolt from the blue, as opposed to the normal format where you clamor for it for a month.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I think reception's been mixed.
It's an interesting one because, I mean, some changes in here, I think, are almost universally well-received. I think almost everyone is happy to see Game Changer go, or maybe not necessarily Game Changer, but happy to see something go to just kneecaps Bombo because everyone hates Bombo. And although the BTL deck, when it first came out, people were like, ah, that's cool, and then kept playing against it, and now everyone's happy to see Mascom and Takeover go. Personally, I'm very happy to see Mascom go because I just don't like it as a card, but like in the context of BTL, I think that's fine. The other three are kind of weird because I feel like if you'd gone back 8 months and said, like, hey, Corpse already ahead and we're going to take out Slot Machine and Engram Flush, everyone would be like, yeah, those are absurd cards. They're so far ahead of the curve. Kill them and balance it out. Maybe take Roseki out to make it fair. But then the way that this Corpse super far ahead meta ended up looking was just these stupid busted decks that didn't play either of those cards. And now it's kind of like, oh, these are gone. That's weird. Every Corpse is crap. What do I do without these cards?
Yeah, I think we're all quite happy that Mascom went. But yeah, those three, Slot Machine, Engram Flush, and Fairchild 3, to clarify if you've not seen it yet, they almost felt tagged on in a different way to the three targeted items. You've got Game Changer and Government Takeover as well.
So I don't think anyone's surprised that Slot Machine or Engram Flush, and maybe people are a bit surprised about Fairchild 3, but let's lump it with the other two. And I don't think anyone's surprised that they were addressed because Nissei have said for a while that they want to bring ice back down to a kind of more reasonable spin cycle level, possibly a bit better than that. I think it's just the surprise is just that it's just those three cards, right? We're not doing anything else to address ice as a whole. We're not doing anything else to really bring that balance between ice and breakers back. And then there's no more changes that are going to come to this for a while. So it's like, this is just kind of a very, almost like a token patch to that ice power creep that we all acknowledge.
Yeah, it feels very blunt. And it feels maybe like a consequence of A, as you said recently, the sort of loss of the restricted system and just going to a ban system, giving you maybe a less elegant way of dealing with these things. You have to just hit some ice and go like, does that do it? Does that work? Do we have to win more?
It's the turning the dial,
trying to bring themselves to this like static range of we're going to do a ban list every 3 months or we're going to do a ban list every quarter, which I know isn't, like Nisei have been very clear, that isn't a fixed schedule, but it's clearly sort of what they're trying to do is give themselves some space for their playtesters to work and some space to develop new content and not have to like emergency patch the game constantly. And it means that they're left with this very blunt tool where it's like, ice is too good, smash a load of ice. And now if the next 4 months are runner dominant, so we're going to get just like, we've banned Buck Alter, Paperclip, Roseki, and Boomerang. Does that do it? Type solution?
On the other hand, what are you going to do? Like, this is your one change.
I have no better solution.
Yeah,
for sure.
This is the first MWL where I just didn't know what should be on this list. I didn't know what the best option was. And I think it's very easy to believe that once you've nerfed Spombo and Built to Last, which I think were open goals, very easy decisions, once you've done that, I completely buy that just whacking these two ice makes the game slightly better than not making any changes at all.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you think So do you think they should have taken a step further? And I know Fairchild 3 was like stated as a side swipe at PD, but do you think there should have been an attempt to look at any of the tempo positive agendas which people seem to think there?
I think that's the one thing that I think was missing. I think you could justifiably ban both Sandbox and Offworld Office. If you had a restricted list, I think you could set it up so that you could only play one. But the problem is that PD still has Luminal. Even if you ban Sandbox, it still has free Offworld Office. PD was kind of the de facto best corp, I think, going into this ban list once you got rid of the kind of extreme outliers, and it's basically untouched going like into this new version. You're really hoping that the runners being able to focus more kind of fixes the dominance problem for you.
Which I think it maybe has. Like,
yeah.
I know lots. It seems PD is not in as good a place now as it was before the ban list.
But. Yeah, I'll buy that's possible. I mean, I was skeptical. I didn't think that could happen at all, but I think there is a little bit of evidence that could possibly be the case. I think we may well find out that we get to tournament and oops, PD was great all along. But I think there's more diversity on the runner side and more pressure put on corps than I would have initially suspected after this list.
Yeah, I think there's also, although I agree, like the thing that I would have liked to see go, like, I think I'd have liked to see Sandbox go here more than almost anything else apart from Mascom. Like, that's the thing that is frustrating me the most as a presence in the meta. But I don't think you could have taken out the extreme outlier corps, taken a shot in their attempt to soften down ice, and taken out Sandbox and left corp in at all reasonable place. As much as I dislike it, like looking at the decks that we are attempting to build now, if you take out Sandbox as well, you're left with basically just complete junk. The dice
and,
to take
and it's
cards.
The chain, right? If you take out Sandbox, how do you beat Hive Mind Max and Turtle everywhere? What on earth can you do against that deck? And then you have to ban Turtle, and then like the problem with these lists is every time you ban a card, you almost always like kind of promote another card that you then need to address.
I think you could have banned Offworld Office fairly safely. Like that doesn't have any of the same knock-on effects.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of weird though, because it's the less egregious of the cards, right? I think we agree that Sandbox is a better card than Office and has more kind of problematic interactions with everyone putting Macrophage in their deck and the like. So it's kind of hard to ban the lesser of the two cards, but I agree.
Especially as it's newer, I think as well. Like it shouldn't really be a huge factor, but I think it is a factor. Like I think it's understandable that Nisei don't want to ban their brand new cards immediately, especially when you're not saying like this card is busted. Just this card does an annoying thing. Get rid of it. Oh, that's a problem for Gateway.
Yeah, I mean, they did indicate in the statement as well that they considered the Cyberdeck Sandbox ban, and it did have some sort of unforeseen circumstances. So it sounds like it's a bit of a Pandora's box situation, like you just stated there, Chris. Is it just created like a cascade of, and now we're looking at Turtle, and now we're, and yeah, before you know it, you're back at just playing Startup, and everything else is banned.
My guess is you'd also have had to ban Amakura if you're going to ban Sandbox. I don't think you can have Sandbox out of the meta at this point without 4-9 with Turtle and Hypermind Max being the best decks by a mile.
Do you think there's anything that should have come off the ban list? Because I know I was looking at one point before the ban list even got announced and potentially Mad Dash as being one that could come off.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this before we were even talking about bans. Just if you're saying we're going to keep everything in the meta, we're going to keep Game Changer in the meta because we think Spombo is okay if you have a way to beat it, we're going to keep BTL in the meta. What do you actually have to release on the runner side to balance that out? And possibly not make the meta popular, but like, what do you have to release to balance it out without banning a load of stuff? And I think it's either Mad Dash or Clan Vengeance. Clan Vengeance is sort of a problem because a lot of the cards that enabled the Clan Vengeance busted decks are gone. Levy's gone and Fisk is gone. Like, the really abusive Clan Vengeance decks are not really playable anymore. It would now just be a tool in those Anarch decks that are already playing zero
value vengeance, right?
To really screw over the Game Changer deck, right? Because they Game Changer and you just go like, no, you will not.
Yeah.
I think you'd still need a powerful PR person to, well, to help you out with the clan vengeance unban now.
It has a serious PR problem, but like, I think if you were looking to unban a single card that would have fixed those decks without needing to apply a heavy ban hammer to those decks, that would have been the one that does it, because it hurts unfair. Well, without Fisk, it hurts unfair decks more than it hurts fair decks. With Fisk, it just hurts everything, because you go, well, you can't not play around it. You destroy your whole hand. You have to.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I mean, a lot, when you look at the runner ban list, almost all the cards on that list are busted or hated or both. And it's really hard to take any of them off for that reason. I don't think Clan Vengeance would be too good in the meta, but I think there's no kind of public benefit to taking it off the list, even if it does make your game better.
Yeah, I agree.
You will literally...
Dash would at least have been... Dash would at least have been funny, because Mad Dash government takeover is, you know, a great thing to have in the meta.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, right? Because Mad Dash, I think we were all talking about as being an answer to these decks that play really aggressive agenda suites. And once you ban that deck, pulling Mad Dash off becomes way less appealing. There's still a bunch of decks that play really annoying agenda suites, but the biggest offender and the one you want Dash against most was that Built to Last deck.
Mm. Yeah, it always amazes me when you look at the ban list and you see runner against corp as well, and you see quite how many more corp cards there are than runner. Runner always looks like a very neat collection of cards that they're all, you can go, yeah, you can point to everyone and go, I understand perfectly. Whereas runner corp is huge, and you've got things like VLC which bounces on and off, and now obviously Slot Machine and Fairchild 3, I suppose, on its own. But you always seem like there's more to argue about on corp than runner.
Yeah, I think you could. The other thing about the ban list, Fairchild 3 has been restricted, I think, not banned.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing you can argue about the ban list is how those two decks were addressed. So I think everyone agreed that Spombo and Built to Last had to get hurt somehow. I think banning government takeover as the vehicle to that is quite controversial and not really what you initially suspect. And equally, I think there is some argument that maybe you should ban Baccaron instead of Game Changer.
Mm.
I'm not sure I buy the Game Changer one, but I do think that leaving Red Planet Couriers is kind of a weird decision over government takeover.
Yeah, that is a bit strange, because outside, if you take out Red Planet Couriers, government takeover sees zero play anyway. It hasn't seen play in years, apart from in RPC abuse decks. And it doesn't feel like there's anything in the meta that people really want there that plays RPC anyway, especially since SSO got way less playable with rotation.
Yeah,
clearly the more abusive card is going to take longer until it rotates, whereas Takeover was due to rotate at the next release.
I guess the argument is, what is the healthiest, funnest Red Planet Couriers deck you can think of? And it's probably still a zero remote, fast advanced deck that just ices and just scores three times instead of twice.
Yeah, it's... I mean, we already saw Pinsel play... The version of the BTL deck that Pinsel was playing is probably still bad, because it wanted to score a government takeover, part of the process was scoring an Atlas with like 10 counters on it, and that's a strange thing.
You can still do that, though.
Now there's no... Yeah, you can still do it, but you can't then immediately win the game by mega dedication ceremonying and rococoing a government takeover. But you have the tool to do that if there's something extremely abusive you can do, when you can shoot to 10 cards out of your deck.
Exactly, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see... how much worse these decks would have been with just mass combat, because I kind of feel like at least there's a lot more ways to deal with it if it doesn't just have infinite money on tap.
Definitely would have been less upsetting. Like the games you played against it with Criminal, where you sort of felt like you were in the game and you were forcing them to res stuff and you were contesting it and it's slowing down their capacity to advance and install ice, and you're thinking like, maybe I'm going to get five or six more accesses, and then they just go like, mass com, I have 25 credits, word.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like your win percentage didn't really change because they had the second mask on, but like it felt so bad. It felt like everything you had done had been completely meaningless prior to that point.
I think that's a reaction to what happened with Spombo, though. So Spombo, they didn't ban it the first time because they thought it'd be okay, then it wasn't, and that caused a bunch of outcry. I think if you do the same Built to Last and say, right, we think we've got it, it's probably fine, and then it turns out it's not, and the deck still lives until the next MWL, however far down the line, then you've got a big problem. You've got to be like,
yeah, that's
better safe than sorry approach with that deck, I think.
It's probably also, or maybe also, a very sort of spike-centered approach to it, and like, oh, I'm fine with them fast advancing a government takeover on me if I felt like I could have contested their economy. And I guess if you're playing a deck with less economic pressure, then the experience is exactly the same and it still feels terrible.
Yeah. And then I guess the only other thing, I think we touched on it briefly, but there was nothing on the runner side to kind of make the balance of runner a bit better. I think going into the list, we all thought Max is probably the strongest deck. 4-9 is a bit behind, and then Shaper is a bit behind that still, probably. So they've done nothing to kind of even those scales, but I guess the hope is that by removing the decks you have to tech for, you kind of force a bit more variation in the runner, because they're more able to, like, 4-9 wasn't being played because it can't beat Spombo or Built to Last, so you can't cover either of those two decks. I guess the hope is that by taking those two decks out, you make decks like that more viable.
Yeah, which, I think the undercurrent of the meta now is that, or the initial change is that 4-1-9 is bouncing back.
Yeah.
And making more of a show, because it's got a reasonable PD game.
Well, that's it, right?
So
PD's the corp that was left. 4-1-9 probably the deck that's best against PD. So almost single-handedly makes 4-1-9 appealing again, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just 4-1-9. What? So if you're looking at 4-1-9 now for maybe there's a still champ this weekend, would you go 4-1-9 above all others? Would you still look at Hive Mind Max? I mean, is the assumption that the metas are going to be a sea of PD and Little House, or are people looking at, I mean, there's other stuff, but
I think right now you would be, especially given that we don't really know what shape the court meta is going to shake out. Like, we assume PD is the obvious number one deck based on what we've seen, but like, it could turn out that there's a lot of CCM about, it could turn out there's a lot of Reality Plus about, like, there's all stuff floating around, but we don't know there's anything sort of mega egregious. I think you could quite happily take Apocalypse 4-1-9 or Max, just whatever you feel happiest playing without worrying too much, because I think they're probably all fine against everything.
PD must be the most played deck, at least initially, just because it's the only top tier corp that was left standing. So the corp meta now is PD and a bunch of stuff that people are unsure about because it hasn't been tested yet or hasn't put up results yet. So I think initially you're going to see a bunch of PD, but you're not going to see it to the exclusivity of anything else.
Especially with the slot machine ban, because if you weren't playing CTM before, and now it's lost slot machine, it kind of feels bad to play that, even if it is a good choice.
Yeah, it's like I don't really understand how you can play Jinteki anymore, because you're playing Jinteki Glacier and you've lost your best six ice.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly more, like possibly 8 copies of ice out of your pole in the deck.
Yeah,
you're playing Fetchalt as well. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot to lose.
I don't really know what Wayland looks like outside of Built to Last. I guess there's this kind of fake Argus decks and Rushy decks and Outfit decks, but they're all kind of just fine. And like you say, MBN is also a slot machine. So it feels like if you were, unless you are very confident, or unless you just don't really like PD or don't really care that much, without doing a bunch of testing, if you're going to store championship very quickly after this list, I don't see how you play anything other than PD.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, corp-wise, I think if you're just picking a corp list, you do that. But I mean, in terms of, like, if you're picking a runner and you're saying you're going to beat the field, I don't believe that PD is going to be greater than 50%.
And I think I agree.
You mentioned, and that's going to be the other stuff you have to deal with.
Yeah, I think
it says, like, you must play 4-1-9 or you will not be able to win games against corp.
Yeah, I think on the runner side, until something shows you that Max is not the correct runner, you would have to believe that Max is still the strongest runner. I think it was demonstrably stronger than 4-1-9 in the previous meta. And you can't account all of that as because 4-1-9 can't cover these two decks.
That's potentially true. I haven't been paying a ton of attention to, like, the whole swathe of deck lists that were in the last couple of store champs. I think we sort of expected there to be a big burst of tech for Max. And outside of everyone on JNet playing Snare now, I haven't really seen that be quite as true as I'd expected. Like, I'd have thought we'd see more sort of incidental best defenses and arc lockdowns, and I suppose there's been quite a bit of magnet, probably even more so now slot machine's gone. But I would have thought there'd be a greater pressure on the max decks at this point, and it doesn't feel like that's quite manifested yet.
I think it's just hard to do, right? It's really hard to cover max without, like, all these things like best defense annoy max, but it's not like they win you the game, especially if you don't know how to play them properly.
That's the thing. I think it's tempered by the fact that max never seems like it's going to be a huge part of any store champ field, because it's difficult to pick up and play. You're not just going to pick up max on the Thursday and go, I've got store champ Saturday, play a couple of loose games with this, get the hang of it, and then go, because it's so deep, that deck, at times, and it punishes you if you make the wrong mistake. Make the wrong decision mid-game, and then you find yourself three turns later, and I'm like, oh, I've actually blown all my recursion, and I can't do anything now. I do wonder if that tempers it as well. People are... there's these secret loot decks. which one Vancouver as well. I don't know, but I think that tempers the Hive Mind Max stuff, but I can understand people not taking it because it isn't super easy to pick up.
Yeah.
Just one more thing on it. So on a granular level with Slot Machine, Fairchild, and Engram going, do you see any maybe overlooked cards maybe rising in stock price a little bit? Are we all going to start playing Buzzsaw now? Because code gates are worse.
I mean, no, right?
Got our ass, right? You never know.
I guess Hunting Grounds has gone down in value.
Yeah, that's true.
A little, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
I don't think there's any runner cards or runner breakers that were like incredible, but were suppressed by these cards, because the ones that were like good are already good. Like Amino was good, and it was expensive to break Slot Machine with it, but now it's just better.
Yeah. I think Buzzsaw is the only one that is interesting because, like John says, the three ice that were stopping it being played are probably the three that were banned. What you're looking for now is more strength four code gates, and there are still a bunch of strength four code gates. So it is hard to play, but I don't think it's impossible that you play Buzzsaw in decks at this point. I just don't see any good deck that is made better by taking out Black Orchestra and replacing it with Buzzsaw.
Yeah, well, Fixed Breaker fans, go and try and find a home for Buzzsaw.
Especially because I feel like there's no Anarch deck right now that isn't playing in Golo that really wants to repeatedly be using a decoder anyway. Like Max, you have either Hoshiko, who's generally on in Golo, you have Max, who wants to break most ice with Botulus and Tranquilizer and Chisel, and just has Black Orchestra as an incidental thing. And you have the Apocalypse decks that don't want to install any of their breakers.
Yeah, I mean, the code gates that are getting played are what? Mausolus, Gatekeeper,
Funhouse
Macrophage. So you can't break any of these with Buzzsaw either. It's not just the ice that was banned. It's all code gates are at least like five strength now. You can break Magnet for cheap.
Turns out that Yogg killed all low strength code gates 7 years ago. And they've just never come back. Never ever come back.
Oh, sad times. Right. Should we move on? I think we've covered the ban list pretty well there.
I mean, our conclusion then is it seems okay. It doesn't seem perfect, but also we have no idea what any of us would have done.
Yeah. I think it's an improvement on the meta. I think the meta now is probably better than the meta before the ban list. In fact, I don't actually think you can argue credibly the other way, so that's fine. And you could argue that the ban list could have been done differently or could have been done better, but it's still an improvement, and I think it's a fairly cautious improvement that leaves the game at least an okay place for like however many months it needs to be.
Cool. Thank you, Dake. So next section. So Fight Night is something that we'll be partaking in the next sort of few weeks now. We were graciously invited by, is it Veil Runner? Veil Netrunner. Don't know their name. Yes, I apologize. I don't know their name.
I'm going to get this wrong as well. From Singapore.
Lovely. Thank you, Doke. I didn't know that. Wow. Cool. So for the uninitiated, if you've not seen one of these before, they're a 4v4v4 tournament with a pretty interesting method of working through your teams of four. It's essentially almost like King of the Hill, right? One of you stays on and you keep playing.
Yeah, it's winner stays on. When you lose, you're out. Yeah. And once your entire team's out, then you've lost and the other team has won. Yeah.
I don't know if the format comes from somewhere in real sports. I know nothing about real sports. The place that the format became, I think, famous on the internet is it's how StarCraft team tournaments are run. You put someone up and they stay there until they get knocked out, and you do that till you run out of people.
Ah, okay. Cool. So we've literally just submitted deck lists for this. We're going to cover our lists first, and then we're going to look at the other teams after. We've been asked not to obviously publish the episodes until after they've already used their super secret tech this weekend. Obviously, we don't believe in super secret tech anymore, so it's not a problem for us.
Also, we don't have any.
Yeah, we're too boring to have super secret tech now. So, but we're going to go over that and we'll talk about what they've got and what we think we're going to be facing and then how we're going to approach it. So, for reference, the other teams are Snare Bears from the US and NWE. For some reason, they've flagged themselves as the beta team, which I think is just much too humble given their lineup.
It's mind games. It's all mind games.
Yeah, I figured as much. So, but should we dive into our lists first? What we picked?
Just to contextualize the list that we picked, when this was being arranged, we were trying to work out when everyone's going to be free to play and how long we'd all take to submit lists. And because there was a bit of a delay on that, we all agreed to organize it after the ban list came out, which meant we had a relatively narrow window between the presence of the ban list and the point that we all had to submit lists. So these decisions have all been done in, what, like 10, 12 days, I think?
Yeah, and before the benefit of seeing any tournaments or anything like that with other results to really crib off.
And where 3 out of 4 of us were moving house.
Yeah, I mean, that is the important excuse to establish. We have all been busy with stuff.
Yeah.
But that, in terms of the meta context, that was, yeah, we have no real data for this. These are just what we think the immediate obvious choices out of the ban list.
Which perhaps explains why our runner decks are quite so unimaginative, right?
I mean, it's not just us.
No.
True. Yeah, I think it's worth clarifying as well that you are expected to represent each faction to a point. You can double up on one.
To an extent. We had some slightly different rules here to normal, right? Like, we didn't have to represent all four corp factions. We could bail on a corp faction and play the same faction twice because no one wanted to play a certain faction that will become very obvious when we start running through the decks. But your decks had to be of different archetypes. So we couldn't play 2 Apocalypse Anarchs. We couldn't play 2 Skunk Void HP decks. There had to be some variation, at least somewhat spread across factions.
Yeah. I'm still not entirely clear what the rules are, to be honest, but we made some decks that evidently abide by them, so it's all fine.
No one complained. So. Yeah. Should we start Runner or Corp? Where do you want to go?
Start with Runner. It's the easy one.
So much more straightforward.
It is, yeah. So we've got 419, classic, straight 419. It's Sank Tech. It's got some Hunting Grounds. It's got Penny Shaver.
Not very exciting. This is the most regular of regular criminal decks that it has 2 diesels in it. That's the most exciting it gets.
The only argument with this list, right, is that we don't have Miss Bones in it, and we'll get onto this in a minute. But maybe like the very slightly interesting bit of 419 is what you do with like your 3 or 4 tech slots.
You play, you've got like Polops at Sank Hunting Grounds, Miss Bones, the other Miss Bones, all sort of floating around in there, and you don't really have room to play more of them unless you want to start making bad sacrifices on the rest of the deck.
Yeah, start cutting boomerangs and deuce and stuff.
We have one outlying falsified credentials that you could potentially turn into a bones.
It's, that's a crucial economy card. It's very important to have exactly four copies of Sure Gamble.
True. Okie doke. So yeah, not a lot to say there really. Obviously we'll publish all these on the site once this episode goes up as well, so you'll be able to see them all for reference and all the other teams just as well. We've got Apoc Tau next. Again, I don't think there's anything super different to say here. It's the same Tau list you've seen online.
Yep, and it's the default Shaper list. I think if you're going to play one deck from Shaper, it's going to be Apoc Tau, unless you ditch Shaper entirely.
Yeah, or there's some very minor argument about whether you're meant to play this in Tau or Lat, right? But the difference is five extra cards and they're all out of the Ashes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Chris, you've played this the most, right? I think.
I played it at one store championship and it did pretty well. I think I got into the cut and then left the cut. I haven't played it a lot since then. My feeling is it probably not quite as good as Apoc Anarch, but I don't know, it's quite good at remote camping and waiting to Apoc when you want to. It's fine.
We were rudely banned from just playing two Apoc Anarchs, so this is where we're at. You have to play the possibly slightly inferior Apoc deck, but it's still a good Apoc delivery system. Yeah. It has my favorite setup of 3 compile, 0 self mod, because self mod's a crutch. Just compiling Golos.
Yeah, compile's really good in it. Mm.
Cool. Thank you, Dave. Max next. Hive Mind Max. Probably the most interesting deck, and definitely not one we created.
Entirely ripped off.
Yeah.
It's been tweaked a bunch as well, right? It's been through a number of changes, but again, mostly by NWE and their team. So I don't think we're doing anything particularly original. Again, you've got a little bit of flex about the slots. You can try and force a clot in there if you want to, which I don't think we have we?
I thought we did have clot.
No, it doesn't look like it.
Did we cut clot in the end, or did we just copy and paste someone else's list without even looking at it?
This was the last version we had when we were talking about it.
Yeah,
it does not look like it has clot in there.
Right, okay, so we don't have clot. So,
I think that makes sense now, maybe. It was good against sports and BTL.
It's interesting. There's quite a lot of fast advance in this which we'll get to.
Yeah, Tau also. We are playing a clotless set of runners here. Tau also, because you've cut all the
clot.
Exactly, you've cut all the recursion, you've got the search. Can't play clot.
Even when they had all the SMCs and symbol chips, the Shaper is not good at playing clot.
No,
I've decided clot is an Anarch card now. Properly.
Yeah, I mean, again, the list is pretty standard. I think you, with the benefit of hindsight, having seen all the lists, you probably will cut a card for a clot, much like you cut a card from Miss Bones in 419, but we're really talking like the 45th card on the list here.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite funny, though, because I think Mike said to me the other day on chat that, at least we've got clot in Max.
Yeah, he did,
So it shows how organized we've been on this one.
At least we know now and not when we're searching the Discord pile desperately for it.
Actually, okay, we're going to have to edit this back through. I've just looked at the document we submitted, and our Max deck does have clot. So I think the Lost Geek has maybe just copied their Max deck into our page as well. After we finish recording this, I'll check all our lists and then message him and say in the chat that there's some mistakes, because we definitely do have clot.
Look at that. See, the foresight.
I was going to say, I thought we did. I didn't think I'd just lied.
I thought we did.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure I'm looking at the process runner, and they have listed 19 programs, no clot, which I assume is just the same thing NWE are playing.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Okay.
They are playing 19 programs. What's the difference? They also don't have a wildcat strike.
They've got two knob curries.
Yeah. Interesting. Anyway, okay. I'm not sure how to return to a point in this conversation that I can edit back to, apart from the fact that we have clot.
Fine, we'll go jumping on.
Let's go back to just I mean, we could just leave all of this in as some incredible process.
Yeah,
inside baseball, we, with our genius foresight, have included Clot in our max set because we definitely knew they were going to play this much faster advance.
Oh, dear. Yeah, leave
briefly,
it in.
Briefly got mind-gamed by NWE.
We'll just call it the unedited, the complete unedited experience as well. Oh, dear. Okay, so now we've established that we have got Clot in Max.
Yep, have got genius. Clot, we're happy about it. There's a bunch of fast advance, go us.
Good news. And then the last one is Apoc Loop, because you need an Apoc Anarch, because otherwise it's just not a Fight Night deck.
It's the most interesting deck to talk about of the four, I think, because it's the newest, right? So this is one of Asgard's lists that he published reasonably recently. It's pretty good. It's an Apoc deck. It doesn't do anything particularly clever, but it goes through its deck very quickly. It plays Apoc very reliably, and then it just stargates you a bunch. So it's not doing anything revolutionary, but it's quite a nicely tuned deck, I think.
Yeah, slightly depressingly for our previous understanding of the game, it appears to be a deck in which moshing is good, which makes me
I feel very pleasant to play this deck. And every time I play moshing, I'm like, I feel like I'm making like a tally chart of like, I played it again and it was good. And every time it's like shaking my core, I'm like, I played it 11 times now.
Asger wrote about this quite succinctly, right? He said, effectively, in a reg deck, mosh is terrible. In a deck where you only care about like 4 of the 40 cards in your deck and just want to get them as fast as possible, then it's good.
Yeah,
it's like he compared to sprint on the corpse side, which I think is a very clean way of putting it.
Yeah, it is good. I do find as well I'm becoming more and more free with what I trash to moshing as well. It started off and I was like, but now I'm like, yeah, that can go. I don't need that. It's just where's the Apoc?
You want one Aesop and then three Apoc, and that, everything else is basically irrelevant.
Yeah,
I mean, it can all get in the bin.
I think that's kind of an interesting framework. Like, these aren't really revolutionary decks, as we've sort of hinted. You're going to see very, very similar things when we talk about the other team's runner decks. These are the obvious good runners now. But it's sort of interesting to look at, like, what does each of them do? And it's like the loop deck just apocs you continually until it gets into a state where it can deliver Stargate very efficiently to R&D and try and win. The max deck kind of does the same thing, but with Conduit instead, right? Like, it doesn't Apoc, but it just serves to blank all of your ice so you can't rush, and then smash Conduit as hard as possible, and all of its cards are optimized around that. The Tau deck is kind of similar, although there you sort of replace Conduit or Stargate with just additional Apocalypses. And then the 419 deck is just the boring grind deck that doesn't really have a specific wink on like that. But the other three are all very focused around just like, we've got this one thing that we're going to do to the corp, and we're just going to do it as much as possible.
I think the difference is that Tau basically tries to remote camp you until you try and do anything, and then Apocs you, whereas Loop will just try and Apoc you aggressively as much as possible early to just set you back to zero as quickly as possible. Because it can't really do that same remote camp thing. Tau's a bit more reactive. And then Max has a bit more to deal with rush than Loop does, because they both have free botchless, which is obviously the best way to get free rush in the entire game at the moment. But Max is quicker at finding it, quicker at playing it, more reliable. Whereas Loop is probably more concerned about, if you try and rush, it's going to try and stop that by Apoc rather than stopping you scoring the remote, which is a string to Max's bow. They're very similar, though, I agree. They're very similar. Basically, kind of try and blunt your rush or remote plan and then win on centrals.
Yeah, which I guess is just, like, in a way, that's quite classic Netrunner. That's maybe how you'd sum up, like, the classic Shaper plan. But they're all... they don't really feel like the classic Shaper deck. They're all there to just stop the corp winning and then, win ASAP rather than sort of grind them out with RDIs and indexings. And
it's because you can't reliably win. I think that's because of Void, right? Aniotic Void means that you cannot reliably win by remote camping. You cannot win off remotes. You have to win off centrals.
Yeah.
All you can do is making scoring out of remotes as hard as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All of the experience I've had with the loop deck matches that. I mean, you can sometimes, if it falls that way, you can maybe contest a rush remote relatively early with a botulus. If you draw Mamba, yeah, you're mainly just trying to wipe the board and just wipe the board again so that you can fight it that way. And yeah, I mean, all my experiences were max. I played like 50, 60 games of it in the end, and Conduit is such an incredible closer. So
yeah. In this one deck, because you've got high one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the difference in experience with Conduit between the Tau deck, where it's kind of just a like sideshow where sometimes you get two or three accesses, and the Max deck, where because you have Hive Mind and Nobkuri, you put it down and immediately access seven cards.
It's absurd. Absurd.
It's so different.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's incredible. It's a great home for it, and I'm glad that they put this deck together, because it's fun seeing it in action, and piling it is very, very nice to play. Mm-hmm. Just difficult. I'm glad you've got it, Chris, actually.
Thanks. it's not got moshing in, so I can play it without being too bad.
True. Let's skip over to the court then.
Well, I was going to say, should we just quickly blast through everyone's runners? Because...
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, we're just going to say the same things over and over again.
It's the same.
True. Should we leave? Who's got the most interesting runner choice?
NWE have the only interesting runner choice.
Yeah.
So we can go to
Snare Bears are playing essentially the exact same four decks with slightly different cards. So they're still playing Max. They're still playing Rare Apoc Loop. They're playing Apoc Tau. And then they're 419 doesn't have Diesel, does have Anakam.
Yeah, they're playing a slightly more eventy 419 with a single turning wheel, but a wild compromise. Oh, and they have Miss Bones rather than...
They do have Miss Bones, yeah. They don't have a Citadel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're, again, it's just the tech cards.
Yep.
The Apoc Loop deck's only got two Apoc as well.
And more.
They've got Labor Rights is the difference. So their deck recurs with Labor Rights.
Yeah, and they also
and only one moshing.
They also have Clot and Max. They've also made the decision that we definitely knew we'd made.
100% definitely made. And then NWE have got 419, which they've titled Boring 419. They only have one Diesel, so there's another very interesting difference. They've got Apoc Loop. And Unity, yeah. Sorry, let's just skate over the Unity.
Incredible. That's where that comes from, I guess.
Asgore is a huge believer in Unity. I don't know. The rest of them obviously believe in it enough to put it in a deck list, but they don't like paying so many credits for Anima, I guess. So they've got 419, they've got Apoc Loop, they've got Max, and then they've got, instead of Shaper, they've got Sunny. Yay.
Who is kind of a Shaper-ish of the old type.
Yeah, it's a very standard Sunny list, right? It's got...
Yeah.
Security Nexus, it's got Gachapon, it's got Boomerang, it's got everything you'd expect to see in the signing list. I guess that's your deck to beat Glaciers.
Yeah, oh right, they have Boomerang. I was going to say they don't have a decoder, so what if someone plays a highly legal copy of Turing, but you just bring it the ice and...
or you Nexus it.
Yeah, who needs a decoder? Who needs any breakers?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's just, I don't know how well placed this Sunny is. I can see why they've chosen it over Shaper. I just think it's countering decks that nobody is playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the very least it expresses kind of the general sentiment that Shaper is bringing the least to the table. Like, you can play a Shaper Apoc deck that is a competent Apoc deck, but there's not much actually in the faction that you're looking for when you're trying to play. Like, it's not like having access to SMCable Clot and Misdirection is absolutely crushing a deck in the same way that maybe it has done in the past.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, it might have good game against PD, just white hatting seamless launches away.
Potentially. I feel like you're just 419 but slower though, right? Like 419 is okay, but...
Yeah, probably.
I suppose you probably crush the horrible CTM grind deck though, don't you?
Yes.
You will be an Aurebiata tech CTM deck, yeah.
Yeah.
Which we'll come on to.
Yeah.
The list looks fine though. I mean, it's the most interesting one here just because it's the only difference between the sets Like, this was, I think, we expected very, very similar decks from all three teams, right? We said we would be surprised if anyone was playing anything different, but like, 11 out of 12 being just the same four decks repeated is, I don't think we've ever seen that in a team tournament before.
No, we haven't. And I think it is also very representative of what you would expect standard to look like, right? It's loop 4-9 and max, and then maybe a bit less shaper, but if there's any shaper, it's going to be an A-port deck, and that's essentially your runner meta. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a pretty good window into it, I think, definitely. And it lines up with what we thought was going to happen. So, Okay. Should we skip to our corp and then we'll do everyone else's corp?
Yep, sounds good.
If runner was neat and orderly, corp is a hot mess.
Corp went from very, very easy to find a bunch of decks in to very easy to find maybe two decks in. And then unless you have a lot of time to test a lot of different permutations, it's very unobvious what you're supposed to pick here.
Yeah. So you're allowed to double up on one corp. Our initial assumption was you would double up on HB. But what we ended up with was effectively two rush decks with Void in slightly different shells. I think Mike counted like 40 of the same cards in the decks.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Once you had to drop the Fetchel 3s from the Acer deck, you start just putting in the same ice as you were placing in the PD deck. You play the same Agenda Suite. You play Anoetic Void and Skunk Works. You play Spin Doctors and Rashida. It's the same list. Like, it was getting ridiculous.
It's got a new paint job and that's DLC. It.
So the obvious deck, the first one that we've got in here is PD. We're talking about we still think it's probably the best corp. It seems like there's maybe some differences of opinions with some of the other metas, but it's ridiculously fast. It's very resilient.
You essentially didn't lose anything. You switch the Fairchild Freeze for a couple of other ice. You can choose Bran or Ansel's or whatever, but the deck doesn't change at all. It's still as quick as it ever was. It's still, the only reason you would not automatically play this, I think, is if you think that you have a big 4-1-9 problem, and we certainly don't think it's anything like that weak against 4-1-9.
No, I think it's maybe even, but I don't think it's like deck destroying, and the nature of this tournament also means that you can't ever be forced to play the deck against 4-1-9 repeatedly. That's not how it works. You maybe play against it once, and then if you win, you play against something else.
Yeah.
It does come back to, I can't remember the previous episode or the episode before, when VLC was banned, we thought it would hurt this deck much more badly than it did. It turned out that although losing the draw did slow you down very, very slightly, the absurd power pretty much all comes from the Agenda Suite, and the fact that between the agendas all making you money and the fact that you're scoring the agendas with Seamless, because PD gets Seamless back every single time, you just don't pay for the agendas. Like, it didn't matter that you lost the econ from DLC because everything was just free anyway, especially now you're not playing as many six cost dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this comes back to what we talked about earlier, right? Where's the surprise over maybe not one of these tempo positive agendas going, but then the fact that it only really seems to affect PD, right? And then that knock on effect. But yeah, this deck is, feels like by far the way the best corp deck. You pilot it, it's, I suppose you could say, slightly uninteractive to a point, because you don't often acknowledge what your opponent's doing.
Just go as fast as possible, right?
Yeah, it's just pedal to the metal. And it's ridiculous to see how quick you can score out on sometimes incredibly low credits as well. Yeah, very robust. Very, very robust.
Yeah.
And also like an absurd agenda suite, right? You've got two global food niches and then seven tempo positive agendas, which is absurd.
Yeah.
It can set up some very unfun situations for your opponent as well. Like, if you're playing Krim and you're playing against PD, you can get into positions where like they're on one or two credits and maybe the correct players to doof them, because from one credit they can trivially score by clicking for a credit and playing two Seamlesses, and now they have eight credits off of their sandbox. The economic side of it is pretty absurd.
This list is as close to standard as I've seen, right? Although this has only got two spin dots rather than three. but I know there's been there's some with that run one Aniotic and two border controller.
The only kind of question apart from that is what you replace the Fairchilds with. That's not really a very a hugely interesting decision space. I think most of people have gone for Bram just because it's got more kind of end the run clout than Ansel, which is alternative, but there's not a huge amount of difference between them.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, where do you want to go next?
BTL.
BTL. Okay.
Yeah.
Fad neuroscience.
this is our kind of concession to the format, I think, right? This is the sort of deck that, and we've spoken about this deck in the past, we would almost certainly never play this at a tournament. But in this format where you kind of need hate cards to beat this deck reliably, it's a really good deck for this type of format. In the past, we played like Grinder PE as in this kind of this role as well.
The iconic Grinder PE in
previous,
like, that was quite something. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I'm just looking quickly through the runners now. Like, I don't think this BTL deck is incredible. I think it's quite fragile, and if it wins, it mostly just wins off roulette draws off the deck. But say this Sunny deck is an example of a runner that it looks very powerful, but it doesn't have a Citadel Sanctuary and it only has one Sports Hopper. So the only tech card in the deck is one Sports Hopper. Maybe if you don't know how to beat it, say PD's already out and you don't really want to play either of your MBN taggy decks against it. Just like you have this thing, it's like, well, are you going to draw your Sports Hopper or are you going to die? In this type of format, because you don't have to deal with the fact that maybe the next round you play against someone who's playing 10 Imps and 5 Citadel Sanctuaries.
Yeah, so and the deck essentially says, all this deck does is say, can you steal a 6 advanced City Works on turn like 7? And if you can't, you are liable to lose if you can't win before that. And it's quite hard to win before that because runners still don't have that much central access. Like I say, we don't think it's a very good deck. We don't think we'd ever play it at a tournament, but I think it's the sort of deck that's good in this format. Also, I don't have to play it, so.
Mike got stuck with that, unfortunately. But yeah, it's Soul Destroying to Pilot.
It's very fast. I don't think it's the games are over in like 5 minutes.
True.
It is also a concession to the fact that we have no idea what else to do with Wayland. Like, we absolutely did not want to play Jinteki without Engram Flush and Slot Machine. There was no way we could figure out a Palana deck, and the only good Wayland deck had just been destroyed. So it was either this or try and figure out some kind of Argus or play Outfit.
I tried a few games of and it wasn't particularly convincing, and we just didn't have the time to.
I think both the other teams have gone.
Sorry, I was going to say, with those, I think you can make a more like stable tier 2 deck that you could take to an event and expect to do okay with because they have game against everything, but not very good game. But with this, you can say, like, well, it can only beat, I don't know, 50% of decks, but against those decks, it's a potential terror.
Yeah, I think the deck that's missing, that I think all the teams have said, if they could have found one, they would definitely have played it, is a net damage Jinteki deck. I think we all agree you can't play Jinteki Glacier or your ice is gone. But again, in this sort of format, if you can find a deck that is just net damage, that tends to cover a huge amount of matchups that aren't necessarily prepared for it. But I just don't think there's one out there. We would have played it if it was, though. I promise.
Let's go to NEH next, because that's actually quite interesting as well. And this is the one we pivoted to. We ended up playing 2 yellow rather than 2 HB. So.
So this is another Asghar list, right? This is the other list he published along with the loop deck. Yeah,
this is the philosophy of Asghar is always right.
Yeah. It's a smart boy, copies work. So it's a kind of, I guess it's kind of a hybrid deck, right? So you've got a bunch of assets, exchange of information, hard hitting user psychographics, like you would expect in an assets bound deck. But then you've also got a bit more ice than maybe is average in an NEH deck. You've got 9 whole pieces of ice, and you've got 2 void. And you've got a bunch of tricks that let you draw some more cards when you are on the runner turn. And it's going to challenge you in 2 directions. Either it's going to ask you to deal with the board state, or it's going to ask you to deal with a void remote.
Hmm. Yeah, and the asset plan, the sort of asset HHN psycho plan, is not super far off the old tempo NEH plans, where the whole thing is just playing out loads of copies of the money Senai and saying, like, are you, if you don't trash this, I'm going to be scoring stuff that's positive for me, like Bellona that gives me money and Sandbox that gives me money, and it's negative for you because I'm trying to bounce your console.
Yeah.
And then the other plan is, yeah, hey, can you break this toll booth 3 times? I have 8 cards.
Yeah. I think it's pretty, again, it's a pretty solid list. The interesting thing about it is that it doesn't play any Sansans. Mm. Asgard says that's right. We currently believe him.
I mean, as we've talked about before, NBN just doesn't have a very Sansan friendly agenda suite. Like, I think Sansan is good if you're playing. If you have room for it, it's good. And the other deck we're playing has 7 agendas you can score off Sansan, so Sansan is fine. But here, you only have 4 you can score off Sansan, discounting 15 minutes because you can just score it anyway.
Yeah, and NEH, you're kind of much better off at trying to score stuff off the table anyway. You don't necessarily even need to score off Sansan. And you can't really afford the econ swing of raising a Sansan and then not getting a lot out of it in this deck. If you raise a Sansan and they imp it, you're automatically kind of out of the hard-hitting news race because you just don't have the economy cards to back it up.
Yeah, I think that's worth noting on both of these yellow decks is that you want to exist in this world of everyone's got no more than 10 credits really.
Yeah.
I'm happy when I'm sort of at that 5 to 10 credit range, and I'd like the runner to be at that 5 to 10 credit range. But if the differential gets too big between us, then it becomes an uphill struggle for you because half of your game plan falls away because you can't effectively land the hard hitting news and get ahead.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Last one. CTM. This is pretty straightforward. I think this is a list that we've had lying around for a while now, right? We looked at back at the start of Gateway even, I think.
Yeah, not much has changed apart from some minor tweaks with the ice to get rid of the slot machines.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. MVTs, it's the same game plan as always, really. MVTs, this is kill related rather than just trying to score win off VOIs, but...
Yeah, I mean, this is just the much more attritional side of the yellow asset plan. You don't have as much of a proactive win con because you don't avoid and you can't just stop trying to roll agendas out through an iced remote. And you don't have as many assets or as much money if you can't stick bankers. But you have a much more unpleasant, like, hey, here's my remote with an F2P and there's something in it. Oh, it was a Rashida, there's something in it. Oh, it's a virtual tour, there's something in it. Now, this one was a Sansan. It has a much more slower, more painful plan for the runners to try and fight through, but it's not wildly dissimilar. You're still just trying to score Beals and Bellonas, and in this case Ares, which maybe justify the Sansans.
Yeah, I found that the spin doctors mean you can actually recycle the bankers groups onto MVTs enough times that it actually becomes a little bit painful for them. So, and even just there's turns where you go, okay, well, you've trashed it and killed the MVT, and oh, I've got another MVT in hand, and I'm going to archive back the bankers and stick it straight back down again. So, yeah.
This list and a few other lists, especially the other CTM list, really do, I think, start to reveal what was missing from asset decks between. When I say missing, like, I don't necessarily mean this in a bad way. Like, maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, depending on how you feel about asset decks. But was missing between the rotation of Jackson and the release of Spin Doctor is just having that one extra effect in makes the deck so much more attritional and grindy. Like, you can, against the Gagarin decks, even, like, they had to play preemptive, and you would never have them be able to, like, proactively get things back in the deck and go search them back up and get things back in the deck and go search them up. And as soon as you put the Spin Doctors in, it's like, I've trashed so many copies of this asset. I've trashed this one asset like 9 times now, which I feel like wasn't really a factor in the game prior to the release of Gateway.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand why recursion went. I mean, you can go back to days of Friends in High Places to see it at the complete opposite end of that spectrum. But I think having Spin Doctor in, it's fun and it opens up this avenue again, which is nice because otherwise I think Court would be very, very difficult to find decks to play that aren't PD.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's got the most interesting corpse? And we'll go to the least interesting ones next.
I think
NWE have like two of the same decks as we do. They have PD, the list is slightly different. They have one Void, two Border Control, three Spin Doctor.
Yeah, I think it's NWE. But less spicy.
Right, yeah. So their PD deck is very similar to ours. I assume they've taken it for the same reasons. It still seems like a candidate for the best deck. Their CTM list is quite different, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, they're into the MCA plan quite heavily there. They're even deeper into the attritional side of it. They're establishing a board that you can't deal with.
Although not as far into it as you can go, as we will see. But they're playing MCAs, they're playing three Amani Senai, they're only playing one Sansan, and they're playing Sandbox. They just are there to make you trash MCA over and over and over again out of a remote.
Yeah. It's the difference between trashing MCA over and over again or bankers over and over again, essentially. So, it's just a bit grindier.
And not necessarily a bad choice into a field you're expecting at least 50% APOC from all of the other teams as well.
Yeah, so. I mean, they've got a macrophage in there. They've got a white space in there, which is kind of an interesting ice choice. But other than that, it's largely what you'd expect. Their ice is generally a bit more expensive, a bit chunkier, which kind of goes with that game plan. But nothing particularly wild there.
And I imagine the choice to have three Amani Sunai in there in the CTM deck, where we have it in the NAH deck, but not in the CTM deck, is to do with Max as much as anything else, right? Like Max against CTM kind of wants to sit back, build up, and then fight everything once they have access to the Imp Engine and they're not too scared of getting hard-hitted. And Amani is very threatening because they play demons, they play incredibly expensive, stupid consoles. They play like stuff they don't want to get bounced.
Yep, I agree. It's kind of sitting in between our two decks, I guess. It's doing a very similar thing. And I think what we're gonna see as we look at more of these is that effectively I think everybody's kind of settled on two different plans. It's either go fast, score quickly, use Void, or it's go fast, then HHN them when something goes wrong.
Yeah. Although this has only got two HHN, which is...
Yeah. We'll shuffle them back in. It's got like eight.
This has eight HHN. Every deck has infinite copies of hard-hitting news.
Okie doke. Cool. So you could say they've wisely decided to take two decks from HB, which we tried to do, but breached the rules.
We disqualified ourselves.
So let's look at their sports mail, because sports mail is also where the US guys have come up with as well. It's never better, so.
Yeah, it's fast advanced sports, right? It's kind of rushy, kind of fast advanced. So no, you're not playing with Void or anything like that. You're playing with a few fast advanced tools. So you've got red level clearances, you've got Audacities. But other than that, you're just going to put stuff behind, like one or two ice, go quickly early, and then try and close out of Audacity. You've got Quantum Labor as well, obviously. So
this feels like... I've played against this deck once or twice. It is a decent deck, but this feels to me like an attempt to... possibly a successful attempt, but it's an attempt to capture the things that were obnoxious about Spombo without being able to play Game Changer.
Yeah.
Because it keeps... The one thing it really does keep is... it being a massive pain for the runner to win before you manage to score out with your ridiculous fast advance, because like it has all of the fake points. It has the two Vacheron that you effectively can't steal unless you have a way to get them in the bin. It has the three Mega Pre that are almost useless points for the runner. It has the three Hyperloop that are almost useless points for the runner. So the runner's path to 7 points is gross. It involves giving the corp like 10 credits and two cards and stealing a Vacheron and hoping they just don't top deck an Audacity for four turns while jamming in as many sort of nonsense ways to score points as possible. They can't play Game Changer anymore. But apart from that, like this sort of functionally is Spombo still. Yeah.
I guess this deck is the argument. Go on, Chris.
I was probably going to say the same thing as you. It's like a good test case to see whether Project Vecaron was really the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is the argument that Vecaron should be banned instead of Game Changer.
Yeah.
And a Bioroid Workery. This is like the spiciest kind.
I assume Workery is in there so you have a way to fast advance Vecaron. I think I'd have to start counting clicks. I assume if you like red level a work crew down,
yeah,
and then res it and then biotic, you can make something happen. Is that how Bioroid work crew works? This thing has a lot of text on it. It lets you install a card after you play biotic, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
But you still have to pay the costs.
It is a fast advanced card. It's just not a particularly good one, but like, I guess once you've already got your free biotics and your audacity, you can afford.
You biotic, you install your triple advance, then your audacity, and you score the Vecaron. It's sort of a minor way to make that card not completely dead in your deck. But your primary plan is just biotic, audacity, spin doctor. I've seen a lot of clips of games where people turn one audacity agendas out in this deck.
Yeah. So I think it's a pretty straightforward deck. It's okay. It's quite good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. And then the last deck they've got left is they've got a BTL as well, but not Neurospike. Much more wholesome, shall we say?
Sure. I mean,
it's got void.
It's got dedication ceremony reconstruction contracts. I don't know how wholesome it is.
True, but only two dead ceremony and only the single construction contract, although we do have to times that all by three because we've got Spin Doctor. But it's much more of a... You've got void to protect stuff out of the remote, and you've got some sort of FA tool as well there. You've got an audacity. So it's a bit more straightforward.
You still, again, this is the argument. This deck is the demonstration of why Red Planet Couriers maybe should have been banned as well, I guess, even though it's not in the deck. But like, you've still got this really dumb advanceable ice suite.
Yeah,
massively. And that's interesting. There's not. I don't know. I can't remember. Snare Bears don't have Red Planet Couriers either, do they? No. Okay.
No, but I don't think they're playing much ice.
They're not, no. That's a good place to jump over then. I suppose if we jump over to their Wayland, which they called Fake Titan.
Yeah.
So it basically says what it is. Yeah.
Well, it's Fake Kill Titans particularly.
Yeah.
In
so I think we should state that of their four lists, three of them are running triple hard hitting these.
Yeah. When we looked at the NWE lists, I briefly felt very bad that I was playing Sistos Sanctuary in 419 rather than Political Operative. Then I looked at the Snare Bears list, just like, no, I feel good. I feel good about being on Sits Hank.
I suppose it's interesting in a way because you could say they may be all the same archetype if they're hard hitting new skill. But
I mean, they're playing it in three different factions, though, right? That's a
was that the rules? I can't. The rules can be complicated. It's all tuned out.
So this Wayland one basically is Titan, right? They're playing it in the outfit, which means they can play Trebuchet, but it's almost a bog standard Titan kill list with economic warfare, hard hitting use, and then a bit of fast advance with like audacities and botic labors and reconstruction contracts. It's as generic as you can get, I think.
And sort of by the same tone, the BTL deck was, although it doesn't have kill in it, so this might be a bit of a stretch, it's a very similar game plan to the Argus plan, where you have something in the remote. In the Argus case, it was kill. In the BTL case, it's an Animatic Void to just try and get to 5 points and then fast advance out. So these decks are both in... We were saying, like, we just couldn't find a good Wayland deck. We just played a stupid Wayland deck instead. These two lists have both taken a pre-existing okay Wayland deck from the past, from before the BTL busted era, and are trying to transpose it into the current card pool. So if one of them succeeds, if it turns out that this deck is good, that's probably a good sign for the faction, even though, you know, they're both playing a bunch of audacities and reconstruction contracts, but it's probably a sign that there is a future in playing not Neuro in the faction.
And that is Wayland, right? It wouldn't shock me if either this or the BTL deck turned out to be good, because they're based on decks that have been good in the past.
Yeah,
and you've added Skin Doctor, which is a great card, but
yeah, but hadn't been recently, possibly because they have just been hidden behind BTL. I guess that's the question. Yeah. Like, is it just a case that these things are bad, and they're trying to disprove that, or is it the case that like they were fine in the same way that maybe these faster one sports decks were fine, but why would you play without Game Changer when you can play with Game Changer?
Yeah.
I guess it might be something to do with the format as well. Like, I think the reason we didn't try this kind of deck before was that 419 is just so loaded.
Yeah, that is true.
It was hard. Whereas here, you can probably dodge 419 and you might be okay.
Yeah, or if you think your fast advance plan is really good, maybe you say this is a deck that we will just like fire into 419 and FA and not try and
and that's a very Snare Bears mentality, right? They like this sort of deck against 419 a lot, and they do take decks like this to counter 419.
Yep. So very notably, of looking at their other decks, although they are playing 2 HB, Snare Bears aren't playing PD. They do not believe, unlike us or NWE.
Yeah, we've kind of scouted / argued with them about this a little bit. They think it can't beat 419, right? They think it's a dog to 419 and not good enough against other factions to make up for that weakness.
Yeah, I believe that it is good enough against the other factions, and the 419 matchup is winnable, and you probably just don't choose to play it in this format. And there aren't enough obvious alternatives to completely sub it out of the list. So they're playing probably the deck that if we looked at the list of players very closely and then thought, like, hey, what are they all going to be on? I think we probably could have taken a fair crack that Big Unit 3000 would be on Hard-Hitting News Kill Asa.
Hard-Hitting News Asa, yeah. If there's a signature deck for a signature player, this is it, right?
Yeah.
Again, this is very, very similar to like the Asa decks that were going around last year. Time is meaningless now. But you've lost VLC. But it's still the same plan, right?
Yeah, and this is a deck also that I feel like, I mean, this is true of me, and I have heard other people say it as well. I think it's, you look at it at first and say, like, surely this cannot be good when people know what's happening. Surely this is all just suckering people who think you're on a normal Acer deck and then hard-hitting them turn one. But then you play against it a few times, and it turns out these assets are just good, and this ice is good. These agendas are all horrible to steal. Like, it's 3 Vacheron and an Ikwa, and fully op gives them such powerful economy with the Acer list that it's really difficult to stay afloat through this number of hard-hitting users while contesting their remotes to make sure they're not about to score a Luminal off the board and then also score a setup to score a massive Vitruvius or something.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Very surprisingly solid lists, these ones. And I ran into it today or yesterday and just blanked that it would even be hard-hitting news. And the first one landed, I was like, oh, yes. And then it's very hard to dig yourself out of that hole.
That was a classic scouting error, John. You were playing against a player and you have a spreadsheet with their deck in it.
I think it is a surprising deck to play in the format of open deck lists. Despite what we just said, I think we still would have felt better with almost any other HB deck, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't have played this. I think you can justify it, but I think you must really, really have to believe the PD is bad to play 2 HB decks and have this be one of them, I think, which is interesting for the testing that Snare Bears have done.
Yeah.
It's hard to peer into someone else's testing process because you never know. And we've done it as well, I think, where you can test yourself into a hole where you create such a closed loop of this is the only runner deck, this runner deck crushes everything, that you can push yourself away from from obvious choices sometimes, which is why you try and craft a proper gauntlet and stick to that to avoid doing that. So, but yeah, I'd wonder if this was a result of that, if PD got pushed out because they just found it such a good 419 list and they were also hot on it that they just were like, I can't bring myself to play PD, or if it was a more of a choice of we're going to pick this asset list because we think it sits nicely into this 4-on-4-on-4.
Or honestly, format. It's just that they like this deck list, right? And Jonas especially likes this deck list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's personal preference can never be ruled out as well. Like there's something to be said for that all the way through. You try and be dispassionate, but it's very hard to not do that. At times, we've all said in the past, we've all avoided playing Titan because we didn't enjoy playing Titan.
Even to the extent that you very good fully cast it, and the one time that I did make you play it, you had a truly awful day.
Never again.
Yeah, never to be repeated. Yeah. And then we back onto wholesome proper decks like Grindy Gagarin.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. You've got to be at least somewhat attuned with your deck. You've got to be happy with it. Otherwise, you're not going to be making the right decisions.
Yeah, definitely. Should we talk about this sports metal list, because it's interesting.
So Wayless Ice, right? So the NWE Fast Advanced Sports we talked about has, I think, 14 ice, so quite a lot of ice. On the basis it's going to stick stuff behind a couple of ice and annoy you repeatedly your game. This one has a grand total of 5 ice, and 2 of them are vanilla.
Yeah, and they have called this deck No Ice Plus 5, I believe. Somewhere out in the ether of secret floating decks, there is a sports deck. There's an iceless sports deck that is supposedly good. It's basically it's this plan, but with less assets and less ice, and just the full all in on we're going to fast advance, and we're going to spin doctor. And this is like a tamed down version of that plan. And I think the NWE deck comes from the same genesis, but is an even more tamed down version of that plan.
So essentially your gamble is that you can fast advance 7 points before they can find enough real points to win, because they've got so many dumb not real points.
Yep.
And that's all this is, right? It's got three Brotherhood Labours, it's got all three Audacities, it's got Red Devil Clearances and Subliminal Messagings and Jeeves to do the fake Russian fast advance trick. Mm-hmm. It's just going to try and score 7 points as quickly as possible and hope that you can't win in the meantime.
Yeah. Do you think we've got any, if you had to pick one of the runners that we've got at the moment, because this is one deck that we didn't obviously take ourselves, what would you pair up?
Yeah, Max, I think. Yeah. Followed by, if Max is already eliminated or we need it for something else, followed by Luke because it has Stargate.
Yeah. It's really hard to beat this deck without Clot, I think, because you cannot get enough accesses. Stargate means that you can steal Vacherons and actually score points for it, which is pretty compelling when you're effectively shortening the time that they have to win by about 4 turns. But if you don't have Clot or Stargate, I don't see how you reliably beat this deck at all.
You have the Sports Metal plan, you turn one access of Vacheron.
Yeah, sure.
Simply rip one off RNG.
Just simply steal a Vacheron turn 1 or 2.
Cool. All right. And then just onto CTM.
Save the best to last.
Yeah, this is. we shouldn't really give this too much limelight because it's a horrible, horrible list.
So we said nobody found a grindy PE deck. They have found a grindy Arubiata Tech deck. Hooray!
Yeah, which is it's the big bad that sort of floats around in the alleys of JNet Casual and leaps out on you when you're least expecting it.
Occasionally sometimes you're good.
Yeah. When you've decided I'll have one more game before I go and watch the movie, and then someone joins your lobby with this and you spend 45 minutes hanging your head.
What this deck does is proves that Sandbox should have been banned, because the Arubiata Tech CTM recursion loop is painful and annoying, but you can fight through it. And the time you get completely obliterated is when you run into a macrophage and you weren't ready to deal with the macro and you lose four, they gain four and you're completely trashed. And the only reason they can justifiably play macrophage is because half their agenda suite is sandboxes.
Yeah. This deck does two things. I think it's a compelling, like you said, compelling argument to ban sandbox, albeit too late. The other thing, this is like the kind of end point of CTM thinking. Both the other decks, we said that CTM now is let's recur some assets with Spin Doctor. So it's Banker's Group in R1, it's MCA in NWEs. This one says, what if that asset you recur several times is Arabiata Tech? To make like the ultimate grindy, as grindy a version as possible. And this is what you end up with.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you know you're in a dark place when you have a CTM deck and it's playing two upgrades and they are not Sansan or MVT, even though both those cards are legal. It's playing two Chrisiums because they don't want to get Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they're not playing MCA because I don't fully see. But it feels like you have to do far more work before you can get to the point where you can make the runner run. And when you do that, it's obviously when you just start scoring Bolanas and Sandboxes off the board. Or I guess you... I mean, even Tomorrow's Headline doesn't do that much because your only tag punishment is Boom. Whereas I feel like if you had MCAs, you'd have a way to... You'd have a second thing that you were repeatedly recurring and you just sit it in the remote over and over again. And if the runner doesn't contest it, you start fast advancing Sandboxes.
Yeah. I mean, let's not try and make this deck better, though, right?
Definitely not one for kitchen table.
God, no. Unless you want your friends to hate you.
Yeah, it's unpleasant, but yeah, to say the least. So
yeah, this is one. I think there's a few here, like this CTM and the Sports Metal Fast Advance, and maybe the Void outfit are corpses that we've not really seen before. That before we can really properly say this is the runner that we put up against this, everything else is bad, or this is the runner you put up against this and this is how you play, these are the matchups that I think we need to test, whereas the others we can kind of look at and say
that's the grail of this format, right? That's what you really want in this format, is a deck where your opponents look at it and go, well, we can't play three of our decks into this, we can only play one of it, and if we lose that or if it's already eliminated, we just can't play against that deck.
Yep.
And I'm not saying any of these decks do meet that, but both the Sports Metal and the CTM are candidates for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we'll probably review once we've tested and then maybe give some feedback on what our game plan is or was going into the matches. So we can and see how well that panned out. But I'll be interested to see what we get from testing on those.
Yeah. Game plan, we're going to keep track of how many, I mean, especially because they appear in like four decks, we're going to keep track of how many successful turn one Vacheron steals there are.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be pivotal to this tournament.
Yeah, then work out a way to replicate that and then dominate Netrunner.
Like, right, I think we've probably summed up enough there. And yeah, there's anything else.
To ramble through a lot of deck lists.
It was. But that's what people tune in, I think, I've gathered now.
I mean, that's what we found out when we streamed those Geist versus RP games, right? Is people, the more painful the experience it is, the more people seem to enjoy watching.
It's a shared crazy bonding moment at that point.
Just quick, in terms of what the others have done, okay, do we feel like anyone has like smashed the meta and brought something that none of us saw coming? And we like think revolutionizes thinking about Netrunner right now because we haven't done that.
No, I think I think effectively there are two decks that are here, or two kind of archetypes that are here, which are a very grindy CTM and a very aggressive sports fast advance that you could see being long-term fixtures of the meta, but I don't think either of those are particularly wildly surprising.
Yeah, I think I would concur. I did definitely the 5-ice sports metal would be one I expect to start seeing showing up in store champs before this event even occurs. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it shows up more and more and turns out to be good.
And like Arabiata Tech, CTM had already made cuts at the UK Store Championships. So again, it's one that you wouldn't be shocked, albeit you would be very depressed to see.
Just don't do it, kids.
Say no to macrophage.
Yeah, exactly. Ban it. Ban.
Ice was not meant to have so much strength. This is not how Netrunner was meant to be played. Ice was meant to have zero strength and 500 subs.
Well, arguably, macrophage is meant to be a tech card, not an economy card, but there we go.
Very true. Yeah. Okay, right. So let's turn on to lighter subjects a little bit at the end. So Nisei have announced Continentals are back. We knew they were going to be online anyway, but they now made the announcement today, the early hours of the dates. So as we are graced with the presence of a current Continental champion, we should talk about it. Apex, I think sort of mid-August, and then we got Europe, Africa the week after that, and then Americans the week after that. So we're still a while away. Yeah, I'd imagine that the timeline will probably be us now, with 23rd of June. So I imagine the 4v4 tournaments are going to keep us going through the next few weeks into sort of middle of July, but we'll probably start testing some stuff around then, or at least gearing up for it.
Yeah. Hopefully this tournament and a few upcoming store champs will give us a better idea of the shape of the court meta before we start going into this.
Yeah, definitely. Are we all excited for more online tournaments? I know we're not all excited for more online tournaments. We all want to go and play real life Netrunner, and I've greatly considered buying a plane ticket to Dundee very soon.
You should. You can stay here. It's fine.
The world's most expensive store champ for me to go to. But yeah, in a desperate attempt to see someone face to face and play Netrunner for 2 days. But yeah, I mean, it's still good. It was a good experience last year. It's a bit disconcerting because you're at home. But yeah, I think we're generally looking forward to playing in one of these.
Yeah.
I see.
Getting slightly bored of online events, but like if I'm going to do more online events, I enjoy doing these very large ones, I think slightly more than just sort of random small store champs. Because if it's going to take up a day and I'm not going to go anywhere, it might as well take up the whole day and I'm not going to go anywhere.
Also, this is it, right? This is the tournament for the rest of the year. Worlds might be random online, but Worlds is kind of a bit of a time zone nightmare anyway, whereas this one is Euro, so the time zone at least makes a bit of sense. It's the big tournament for the rest of the year, and then hopefully you get back onto in-person tournaments next year.
Chris, do they give you any flair for JNet? Do you become like a boss level opponent?
I have had people sort of start games against me just with some horrible PE thing, just so they could say they beat the European champion.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's brilliant.
That's very funny.
That's fine.
It's a shame as well.
I'm just hoping I get this.
You can't like.
I'm just hoping I can see. Sorry. Yeah, no, that would be good.
Will you be playing on a tablet this year?
Hopefully not.
Well, slow down.
Maybe I should.
That might be the secret.
It could well be.
Yeah. My partner's got a theory that me having long COVID and being exhausted was my secret tech, because I was too tired to be anxious or stressed. I just sort of sat there in a weird fever, just sort of playing Netrunner all day.
Right, so you've just got to be extremely hungover this time.
Yeah. I just hope I get to see one Netrunner player face to face before I lose my European title.
Just so you can wave the mat at them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be nice. We're all starved of face to face Netrunner contact now, although I've seen pictures of some people playing in pubs now here and there. So hopefully in the next 12 months we'll be able to go and start.
Since the last time I played in real life, which I think was Nationals 2019, I've moved house three times, and the state of my physical collection is unreal. It's such a mess. I live in fear of the day that I have to fix it.
Yeah, I've noticed that in the move I have brought my binders, but the mythical Dross box is still in storage, so I'll need to retrieve that as well.
You're gonna have to dig out your copies of Aryabhat Attack. Come on.
Oh dear. Hopefully not. If you go play face to face Netrunner and the first experience is me playing Aryabhat and Grind DCTO.
Yeah, come on, that's round one, and then round two, someone neurospikes you on turn three. That's the future.
That's Netrunner.
Oh dear. Sad times. But yeah, we'll be looking forward to the Euros, I think, and APAC and American. And if anything, they're good to watch and catch up on the streams. It's nice to see. And you can enter a raffle and hopefully be like White Blade and win a tournament and raffle to the end.
Oh, hero.
Oh, excellent. Right, well, unless anyone's got anything else they want to cover, I think we may have reached a natural end. No? All good. Well, until next time, everybody.
Another concise, quick episode. Good job.
We only got lost in what was the contents of our own deck lists, maybe twice. It was very annoying.
This is fine. 1 hour and 28 is about average for us now, I think.
Smelt.
not come close to the mythical 2 hour
proof of concept cast. Yeah.